After the movie Free Willy became a hit, word got out that the star of the film, a killer whale named Keiko, was sick and still living in a tiny pool in a Mexican amusement park. Fans were outraged. Kids demanded his release. I'm Daniel Alarcón. From Serial Productions and the New York Times comes The Good Whale, a story about the wildly ambitious science experiment to return Keiko to the ocean. Listen to new episodes on Thursdays. Want early access to the whole show? Subscribe to The Times at nytimes.com/podcasts to listen on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the relationship between two key figures in the White House, Chief Strategist Steve Bannon and Senior Advisor Jared Kushner, has deteriorated to the point of breakdown. In a fraught conversation between the two, the Times reports, Bannon identified the problem. "Here's the reason there's no middle ground," he said. "You're a Democrat." It's Wednesday, April 12th.
Mr. Trump, thank you very much for joining us on the initial Breitbart News Daily Show.
Well, that's such an honor. The initial show, wow. We'll have to mark this one down for posterity, Steve. Very good. Congratulations. Good luck. You'll do
Steve
well.
Bannon is widely seen as the man who understood, long before anyone else, the forces that would put Donald Trump in the White House.
We were telling people at the time, I said, look, this guy is, people are leaning forward in these audiences when he was talking. Of course, we were mocked and ridiculed and, you know, what are you guys doing? This is a joke. In fact,
and as chief strategist, Bannon was given a top position inside that White House to turn that rhetoric into reality. But last week, Trump removed Bannon from his role on the National Security Council. This week, my colleague Jeremy Peters has been reporting on the growing perception that Bannon is in trouble. Is this Jeremy W. Peters?
It is.
What does the W stand for?
Warren. You don't know that?
Mm-mm. What does the C stand for in my name?
Christopher.
Damn. Jeremy, is the narrative that Steve Bannon is losing power inside this White House a real one?
It is, Michael. He's an increasingly isolated figure, and it's one of the more dramatic turnarounds that we've seen in personnel in this White House. There was hardly anyone outside the family who was more influential in Trump's campaign in terms of helping shape the conservative nationalist populist message that Trump won on. The problem was a lot of the ideological differences that Steve had with Jared Kushner and the family were papered over during the campaign. Now, when you start having to govern and create policy, those divisions become more apparent, and that has really split wide open over the last few weeks.
Well, talk to me about those divisions. You've just identified Jared Kushner. So what are those divisions between the two of them?
So the way that Bannon has explained them to me is they're most of all divisions of style and attitude. And I think that he's underselling the true ideological splits there, but Bannon is right in one key respect. He is a grenade thrower.
Our beloved country is an addict.
He's sharp-elbowed.
And it's addicted to a drug it cannot wean itself off of, provided by the pushers on Wall Street and the mules on Capitol Hill.
He has always been a destroyer, somebody who wants to demolish the existing establishment systems that he sees as so corrupted and corroded by the elites, as he disdainfully calls them.
In the last 20 years, our financial elites and the political class have taken care of themselves and led our country to the brink of ruin.
Of course, Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump.
Looks like this was one merger Ivanka Trump couldn't pass up.
Are the very embodiment of elites in a lot of ways.
Donald's little girl wore a Vera Wang gown inspired by Grace Kelly, and by everyone's account, looked stunning.
They come from Manhattan. They're worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
High-profile guests included Barbara Walters, Anna Wintour, Emmy Rossum with her new beau Counting Crows Adam Derwitz, and of course, Donald's BF Regis Philbin.
And they grew up very, very privileged, both of them. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a cultural clash there as well as an ideological one and one of style and attitude.
I think, Jeremy, that one of the questions all along has been, does President Trump actually share a lot of the ideas and beliefs with Steve Bannon? Or was Bannon somebody who he needed to win the campaign to get to the White House. And now that Trump is the president, someone like Kushner makes a bit more sense at his side.
Yes, that's a... Let me think about that one for a second. Because what Trump actually believes is always difficult to know. It's mm-hmm. been, it was something that puzzled you and I over the course of the campaign as we reported on him as a candidate, right? What is in Donald Trump's heart? And ultimately, voters, especially conservative voters, decided that it doesn't matter. And I think that Steve Bannon has come to that realization over a long period of time. It's irrelevant to him. One of Steve's gifts has always been for understanding the populist social movements that are sweeping up the people who he has identified as political leaders. He did this with Sarah Palin well before he did this with Donald Trump.
She's as smart and as tough and as courageous as anybody I've had the pleasure to work with or anybody I've been around.
He understands the intellectual underpinnings of why these political figures are so popular.
Very smart woman, very unconventional, very unconventional, does it by her own rules.
And he latches on to them.
She's an existential threat to the establishment.
And he gives them a framework for their campaigns, not exactly a set of beliefs, because these candidates like Palin and Trump believe what they're going to believe. Steve gives them a vocabulary, and he gives them an intellectual blueprint, if you will, for their political success.
All right, quick sidebar. What did Bannon have to do with Sarah Palin? I don't actually remember that.
So not many people do, because Steve was very under the radar for a long period. I mean, before he became President Trump's campaign manager in August, just a few months before the election, no one really knew who Steve Bannon was. So Steve Bannon floated around in Tea Party circles from about 2010 on, when he became friendly with Andrew Breitbart. He and Andrew Breitbart were a dynamic duo, I guess is the best way I could put it. I remember meeting them once in Minneapolis for a dinner I had on the calendar with Breitbart, whom I was profiling at the time in a previous job. And he said, "Can I bring my friend Steve?" And I said, "Sure, bring Steve."
Bring Steve. Who's Steve?
Exactly. And sure enough, that was my introduction to Steve Bannon. And this is 2010. He has not changed much since, I got to tell you. He struck me immediately as somebody who was deeply passionate about how wildly astray the political establishment, especially the conservative Republican political establishment, had gone, and what a disservice it had done to its most loyal supporters.
Jeremy, you've said that Steve Bannon losing power is not just a narrative. How do we know that? What does it look like from inside the White House?
So what you've had happen over the course of the last couple of months here is a number of advisors who are more centrist and Democrat come in and take senior positions. That is, you know, Gary Cohn, the economic advisor, Dina Powell, who is another senior deputy to the president, both, I would say, more liberal-oriented in their worldview than most people inside the Trump administration. And crucially, you have Ivanka Trump taking on an official role within the White House. These are people who see the world very differently from the Steve Bannon, Jeff Sessions, Stephen Miller, remember him, the fiery, combative special assistant. They are much more inclined to say, okay, policies have been coming out of this White House, from health care to the travel ban, have not been working. So we need to rethink our approach and cool it a little bit, pump the brakes.
And those policies you've just identified that are not working out that well, travel ban, health care, those are identified with who?
Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller and Jeff Sessions, the conservative nationalist wing of the Trump administration.
Jeremy, these ideological differences that you're identifying between the Bannon camp and the Kushner camp, they seem like high-minded debates that would be had in any White House. But have they taken any different form?
Okay. So against the backdrop of all these sharp policy disputes inside the administration, kind of splitting the right from the left over trade, over immigration, over the budget, and more generally how uncompromising and hard-line to seem, you have this bickering that is getting so severe that aides to Jared Kushner and aides to Steve Bannon and their allies are leaking conflicting reports of who's up and who's down to the media. So you have Trump at Mar-a-Lago late last week getting ready to launch a military strike and drop dozens of missiles into his airfield in Syria. And he's having to deal with what he sees as rather, you know, petty childish sniping between his aides. And he turns to them and he says, work it out.
Wow.
Jared, Steve, Reince Priebus, fix this. I don't have time for it. It's a distraction. And I need you to make this go away.
Okay. Well, what did they say in response to that?
Steve Bannon, from what I'm told, has said to aides, I need to pick my battles. I can't be throwing grenades every single day. And that, while it might seem to you and me to be a rather self-evident observation, is a pretty remarkable thing for a guy like Steve Bannon to say.
I mean, right.
He is as pugilistic and combative and at your throat sometimes as they come. I mean, this is his nature. He is a fighter. And I think to have chosen a fight with someone who is effectively the president's blood, knowing how strong the ties of blood and family are with the Trumps, was, in retrospect, not a very wise strategic move. And I think that's dawned on him. I think other people have made that explicitly clear to him. And he's beginning to rethink just how hard he wants to fight, how much of a purist he wants to be.
Jeremy, does Donald Trump, does the president need Steve Bannon in his White House?
I know that Steve Bannon thinks that he does. I think let me think about that for a second. He is certainly the one who understands the broader swirling social cauldron that has elevated Donald Trump to the presidency. And he saw it at Breitbart. I mean, people have often kind of dismissed Breitbart as this fringy blog that no one read. But in fact, one of Steve's most educational moments in terms of how he saw this growing movement on the right was looking at the comments section in those blogs and seeing what people responded to and how passionate they were and the kind of response that Donald Trump was getting. So in terms of understanding and decoding that voter sentiment, Steve really gets that.
Jeremy, how does Steve Bannon, who you talk to a bunch, see his role?
He is more than just the bearer of the torch for the conservative movement. He is the keeper of Trump's promises. You know, he has committed to memory, written, has etched on his heart, the commitments to trade, to immigration, to fighting radical Islam, these core principles of Donald Trump's fiery populist campaign. Steve's job, as he sees it, is to make sure the president follows through with those. And I think when you bring Jared and Ivanka into the equation, people who have a more liberal worldview, more moderately inclined to tell their father and father-in-law to pump the brakes, that's where the clash comes from.
So if he's the keeper of those promises, what is Jared and Ivanka?
Jared and Ivanka could be a threat to those promises.
All right, so how does this get reconciled?
You know, I don't know that it does. I think at this point it looks bad. I don't think that that means that Steve Bannon is out of a job, but if they can't get something done and Steve Bannon is not able in his capacity as the president's chief strategist to help strike deals with the conservatives in Congress, the people whom, by the way, he's supposed to have the best read on, then that is not going to speak well for his future.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Michael.
On Tuesday afternoon, New York Post columnist Michael Goodwin asked President Trump if he still had confidence in Steve Bannon. I like Steve, Trump said, but you have to remember he was not involved in my campaign until very late. I had already beaten all the senators and all the governors, and I didn't know Steve. I'm my own strategist, Trump said, and it wasn't like I was going to change strategies. Steve is a good guy, the president ended by saying. But I told them to straighten it out, or I will. We'll be right back.
I'm Jonathan Swan. I'm a White House reporter for the New York Times. I have a pretty unsentimental view of what we do. Our job as reporters is to dig out information that powerful people don't want published, to take you into rooms that you would not otherwise have access to understand how some of the big decisions shaping our country are being made, and then painstakingly to go back and check with sources, check with public documents, make sure the information is correct. This is not something you can outsource to AI. There's no robot that can go and talk to someone who was in the Situation Room and find out what was really said. In order to get actually original information that's not public, that requires human sources, we actually need journalists to do that. So as you may have gathered from this long riff, I'm asking you to consider subscribing to the New York Times. Independent journalism is important, and without you, we simply can't do it.
Here's what else you need to know today. The White House is accusing the Russian government of, quote, shielding an ally by engaging in a cover-up of last week's chemical weapons attack by Syrian forces. Russia has claimed that the chemicals were released after a Syrian airstrike hit a terrorist site that held chemical weapons. But in a classified report made public on Tuesday, the Trump administration said that a Russian-made Syrian-piloted jet had dropped one of the chemical weapons and described Russia's denials as a campaign of disinformation. And
You look, we didn't use chemical weapons in World War II. You know, you had a, you know, someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer ignited a firestorm in his comparison of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to Adolf Hitler. Hitler, of course, oversaw a network of extermination camps where gas chambers were used to kill millions of Jews and others deemed harmful to the German state. A reporter asked Spicer to clarify his remarks.
The opportunity to clarify something you said that seems to be gaining some traction right now. Quote, Hitler didn't even sink to the level of using chemical weapons. What did you mean by that?
I think when you come to sarin gas, there was no, he was not using the gas on his own people the same way that Assad is doing. I mean, there was clearly, I understand your point. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. There was not in the, he brought him into the, to the Holocaust Center. I understand that. But I'm saying in the way that Assad used them, where he went into towns, dropped them down to innocent into the middle of towns, it was brought to it. So the use of it, and I appreciate the clarification there. That was not the intent.
By Tuesday night, Spicer had apologized.
I was obviously trying to make a point about the heinous acts that Assad had made against his own people last week using chemical weapons and gas. And frankly, I mistakenly used an inappropriate and insensitive reference to the Holocaust, for which, frankly, there is no comparison. And for that, I apologize. It was a mistake to do that.
Finally, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, en route to Moscow to meet with Vladimir Putin today, said that Assad's reign was, quote, coming to an end, and warned that Russia risks becoming irrelevant in the Middle East by continuing to support him. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.